Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Back in the Day with me, Dave Rivett. This episode, I'll be looking at the early attempts of English clubs to try and win the European Cup. The European Cup's first season was in 1955-56. English champions Chelsea were invited and agreed to take part and were drawn against Swedish champions Djurgården in the opening round. The old fogies at the Football League saw the tournament as a distraction to domestic football and put pressure on Chelsea to withdraw, which they did. This decision seems even stranger now when you consider there was no League Cup. In the mid-50s, just League and FA Cup matches. As for the European Cup, it was a straight knockout tournament. There were no group stages like today's Champions League. Chelsea, if they had played and reached the final, would have played an additional 7 matches spread over 10 months. The first round, first leg matches were in September and the final was in early June. The Scottish champions Aberdeen also withdrew. So 5th place Hibernian were invited and accepted. The tournament itself got underway with 16 teams taking part. The final was won by Spanish champions Real Madrid, who defeated French champion Stade de Reims in Paris, coming from 2 goals down after only 10 minutes to win 4-3. By the way, if Chelsea had taken part and defeated Djurgården of Sweden, they would have met Hibernian in the quarter-final. Hibs went out to Reims in the semis. After the great success of the first tournament, 6 new nations entered teams: Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, Luxembourg, Romania, Turkey and England. The FA continued its stance on it being distraction, but United manager Matt Busby was having none of it. Against their wishes, Manchester United entered the competitions as English champions, becoming the first team to play in Europe. Rangers of Glasgow, the Scottish champions, also entered. An additional place was awarded to Real Madrid as the competition's reigning champions. They had finished 3rd in La Liga. Atletico Bilbao were the current Spanish champions. Spain therefore becoming the first country to provide 2 representatives to the premier European competition. So, on to Manchester United. Their preliminary round opponents were Anderlecht, champions of Belgium. The first leg in Brussels took place on the 12th of September 1956 in front of 33,000 fans. The Manchester United team on this historic occasion was Wood, Foulkes, Byrne, Coleman, Jones, Blanchflower, Berry, Whelan, Taylor, Violet and Pegg. United coasted to victory. A goal in each half from Dennis Violet and Tommy Taylor gave them a nice cushion for the second leg. Some 6 weeks later, the second leg took place, the first European Cup match in England at Main Road, as Old Trafford still lacked floodlights. On an incredible night, the youngsters of Manchester went gold crazy, winning 10-0, 12-0 on aggregate. The Belgians were totally overwhelmed. Tommy Taylor got a hat-trick, Dennis Violet went one better and got 4. Liam Whelan got a couple, and there was a goal for outside right Johnny Berry. I think it might still be United's biggest ever victory. So on to the round of 16, and German champions Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund had made really hard work of Spora Luxembourg in the previous round, winning 4-3 at home, but then incredibly losing 2-1 in Luxembourg. But at a playoff, they put things to right and hammered them in 7-0. A crowd of 75,568 poured into Main Road for the next instalment of this exciting new tournament. It looked like another great win was in store when Dennis Violet scored twice and David Pegg got another to put United 3 up in half an hour. The German champions held on and there were no more first-half goals. In the second half, the Germans started to come more into the game and were rewarded with a goal back by Helmut Kapitulski, and it got worse for United when Dortmund got a second in the 75th minute through Alfred Piebler. United came back but could not improve on their 1-goal lead. It will be a tough match in Germany on the 21st of November 1956. United were without inside forward Dennis Violet for the return leg in Dortmund. The partisan Borussia crowd did their best to cheer the German champions on to victory, but the United's defence held firm and came away with a goal to draw, winning 3-2 on aggregate. On to the quarterfinals and a tie against Spanish champions Atletico Bilbao. It was getting tougher all the time. The snow was still coming down and Bilbao United first leg kicked off on the 16th of January 1957. Babel got off to a perfect start when Ekavana opened the scoring after only 2 minutes. He then got his second just before the half hour. Things were even worse for United 2 minutes before the break when Urrutia and Achio headed in from close range to give the Spanish champions a 3-0 half-time lead. Matt Busby's memory in desperate trouble. Whatever he said at the interval seemed to have worked. 3 minutes after the restart, centre-forward Tommy Taylor's shot from close range made it 3-1, and just 6 minutes later, Dennis Violet made it 3-2. But Bilbao weren't finished yet and struck twice in quick succession. Pasquera in the 73rd minute and Mugaya in the 78th put Bilbao 5-2 up. United gave themselves a chance in the second leg when Liam Whelan made a fine run down the left cut inside and smashed an unstoppable shot into the top corner. First leg score, Bilbao 5, Manchester United 3. 3 weeks later, another 70,000 crowd turned up at Main Road, Manchester under the floodlights to witness the second leg. In a red-hot atmosphere, United put the Bilbao goal under severe pressure, but with half-time approaching, still hadn't broke through. But then, after a lovely bit of ball play, that man Dennis Violet smashed in from close range to give United a 1-0 half-time lead. The Spanish champions had a few dangerous attacks early in the second half, but it was United who scored next. In the 70th minute, a free kick was played to Tommy Taylor, who fired in. The United fans were enraptured 6 minutes in time when winger Johnny Berry scored what would be the winning goal. Manchester United 3, Atletico Bilbao 0. United wins 6-5 on aggregate. Up next for United, a tie against the European champions, mighty Real Madrid. A huge task awaited Manchester United on the night of the 11th of April 1957. Real Madrid had won all of their 5 home matches in the European Cup, scoring 20 goals in the process. A massive crowd of 120,000 were in the Bernabeu Stadium on the European Cup semi-final, as the European Cup semi-final between the European champions and the champion of England got underway. Duncan Edwards had the first shot of goal, but his long-range effort was well wide. De Stefano then headed just over. Then a break from midfield from De Stefano led to the speedy Hento crossing only for Mateus to head wide. After 15 minutes, although Real were the better team, with De Stefano pulling all the strings, United were doing okay. Ray Wood tipped a fine shot by Real over around the post. After just over half an hour, United got their first corner of the match, but it came to nothing. A Taylor header, which looked quite tame, gave the Real keeper more problems than it should have. United seemed to be growing in confidence. Just before half-time, Wood rushed from his line to save from De Stefano. Then a controversial moment. Right winger Johnny Berry was brought down the penalty area, but the referee, Mr. Horn, said no. Tommy Taylor cashed in on a defensive mistake and was clean for a goal, but a final touch put the ball too close to the keeper, who smothered the shot. Half-time, 0-0, but really, United could have been in front. Copper shot over the bar in the early stages of the second half. Then Mateus hit a powerful right shot inches past the post. Real Madrid were piling on the pressure. Hento, after some good work down the left, forced a fine save from Ray Wood. United cracked just past the hour when Real headed in across from Hento. 10 minutes later, Di Stefano made it 2-0. The United defence was under great pressure, but 8 minutes from time, they got a lifeline when, after a goal-mouth scramble, Tommy Taylor headed home 2-1. But before United stopped the celebrating, Mateus scored again for Real. Final score, Real Madrid 3, Manchester United 1. 2 weeks later at Old Trafford, yes, they were back on their home ground, floodlights now installed, 65,000 fans crammed in to watch United's match of the season. Young Bobby Charlton came into the team, replacing the injured Dennis Violet. Real Madrid, although two goals to the good, hadn't come to defend, and early on, keeper Ray Wood saved well from De Stefano. United pushed forward, but after 25 minutes, Madrid quickly turned defence into attack and Copper owned the scoring. 8 minutes later, Real made it 2 to put Real Madrid 5-1 up on the night. 5-1 up on aggregate. Manchester United never gave up and really played some good stuff after the break and got their reward on the hour when Tommy Taylor scored from close in. United pushed forward again, but couldn't find enough until the 85th minute when young Bobby Charlton made it 2-2 on the night. Manchester United were out 5-3 on aggregate, but had represented England well. Real Madrid won for the second year in succession with a 2-0 win in the final over Italian champions Fiorentina. So, on to 1957-58, and once again, Manchester United will be England's representatives, winning the first division comfortably, finishing 8 points in front of runners-up Tottenham Hotspur. Once again, the amount of clubs entering the competition had risen, including the champions of Northern and the Republic of Ireland. The champions of the Republic of Ireland, Shamrock Rovers, will be Manchester United's opponents in the preliminary round. 45,000 fans were in Delamont Park, Dublin, to see the Irish team totally outclassed by England's champions. Tommy Taylor and Liam Whelan both scored twice. David Pegg and Johnny Barrett also scored to give United a 6-0 first leg victory. One strange thing, which I never heard of before, because Delamont Park had no floodlights, the teams agreed to change at half time with no break. Maybe the Irish part-time has just run out of steam, losing 6-0 when it was only 1-0 at half-time. In the second leg, after Dennis Vyle and David Pegg put United up after 20 minutes, it looked like being another big victory. But Rovers held on until half-time and even pulled a goal back in the 55th minute through McCann. 5 minutes later, Dennis Vyle made it 3-1. The final goal of the night came in the 66th minute when Hamilton got Rovers second. The Irish champions have put in a very credible performance, only going down 3-2 on the night, 9-2 on aggregate. Next up for Manchester United were the champions of Czechoslovakia, Dukla Prague. Dukla were a strong side, and United, cheered on by 62,000 fans at Old Trafford, could not break them down in the first half. United really cranked up the pressure and were finally rewarded just after the hour with a goal from Welshman Colin Webster. 2 minutes later, Tommy Taylor made it 2. And after 79 minutes, David Pegg completed the scoring. United 3, Dukla Prague 0. 2 weeks later, United made the trip to Prague and never looked like relinquishing, it's easy for me to say, their 3-goal lead. Although Dvorak put Dukla in front after 17 minutes, the United defence held firm and went through 3-1 on aggregate. Into the quarterfinals and a tie against Red Star Belgrade, champions of Yugoslavia. United were forced to make changes, missing were keeper Ray Woods, Harry Gregg played between the sticks. Also missing were wingers Johnny Berry and David Pegg, who were replaced by Kenny Morgans and Albert Scanlon. Once again, a big crowd, 60,000, were at Old Trafford for another glamorous European Cup night. Red Star soon showed they were a class act and were given as good as they got. And it wasn't a shock when Tasic gave them the lead in the 35th minute. It was a lead they held on to until half-time. In the second half, United pushed forward and started creating chances. One of these chances was converted in the 65th minute by Bobby Charlton. Now it was all United. Cheered on by a noisy Old Trafford, Eddie Coleman got the winning goal 9 minutes from the end. Manchester United 2, Red Star Belgrade 1. It was going to be a tough, hard second leg. On a freezing February night, on a snowy pitch, Dennis Vyle gave United the perfect start when he ran clear and scored after just 2 minutes. After half an hour, a powerful left foot shot by Bobby Charlton gave the keeper no chance, 0-2. A minute later, a shot cannoned off the keeper straight to Charlton and scored with ease. United were in dreamland, 3-0 up and 5-1 up on aggregate. He stayed 0-3 until half-time. In an incredible 15 minutes after the break, the game turned on its head. A minute after the break, Kostic made it 3-1. 4 minutes later, a Tasic penalty made it 3-2. And 2 minutes before the hour mark, Kostic scored with a fine free kick. Somehow, United managed to stiffen up their defence and hold on to the final whistle. Red Star Belgrade 3, Manchester United 3. United win 5-4 on aggregate. One of the worst disasters in sporting history occurred on the 6th of February 1958. The aircraft carrying the Manchester United party home stopped to refuel in Munich. British European Airways Flight 609 crashed on its third attempt to take off from a slush-covered runway at Munich Airport, West Germany. There were 44 people on board, 20 of whom died at the scene. The injured were taken to a local hospital where 3 more died, resulting in 23 fatalities with 21 survivors. The fatalities were co-pilot Captain Raymond, journalist Frank Swift and Danny Davis, Man United staff members, club secretary Walter Krickmer, trainer Tom Curry and coach Bert Woolley. The Manchester United players who died were Jeff Bent, Roger Byrne, Eddie Coleman, Mark Jones, David Pegg, Tommy Taylor, Billy Whelan and Duncan Edwards, who survived the crash but died in hospital some 15 days later. Of the injured players, Johnny Berry and Jackie Blanchflower would never play again. Bat Busby, United manager, was fighting for his life in hospital, leaving his assistant Jimmy Murphy standing as manager. United's first match after the disaster was an FA Cup fifth round game at home to Sheffield Wednesday, a team made up of reserve and youth team players and a wave of emotion beat Wednesday 3-0. 3 months later, it was the European Cup semi-final first leg home to the Italian champions AC Milan. United have found replacements with several moves into the transfer market. Ernie Taylor was signed from Blackpool and Stan Crowther from Aston Villa. Not surprisingly, their league form had dipped considerably, winning only one of their post-Munich games, slipping to ninth in the table. But to their credit, they reached the FA Cup final, only to lose 2-0 to Bolton Wanderers. 5 days before the Milan match, the United team that took to the field at Old Trafford was Greg, Foulkes, Greaves, Goodwin, Cope, Crowther, Morgans, Taylor, Webster, Violet and Pearson. AC Milan were a very strong team. In November, they had crushed Glasgow Rangers at Ibrox 4-1. No mean feat. The makeshift United side put in a fine performance, and even though they went one down in the 24th minute for Pepe, they fought back to gain a 2-1 advantage with goals from Dennis Violet and Ernie Taylor. The second leg in Milan was a totally different story. Pepe put the Italian champions one up after only 2 minutes. United held on to half-time but succumbed in the second half. Lidholm, Deneau and Pepe scored again to give AC Milan a 4-0 victory on the night and a 5-2 aggregate victory. AC Milan proved what a good side they were in the final against Real Madrid in Brussels. They twice led, only to be pegged back. It was 2-0 after 90 minutes. In the 107th minute, Real clinched their third successive European Cup with a goal from left-winger Hento. In 1958-59, England will be represented by Wolverhampton Wanderers. Manchester United, following the Munich air crash, were invited to take part, but the Football League refused to allow the club to compete. As the draw had already been made, United's Premier Round opponents were given a bye into the first round, as were the Wolves. Wolves' first ever European Cup opponents will be Schalke 04 from West Germany. The Wolves side that took to the field on the 12th of November 1958 was side bottom Stuart Harris, Slater, Wright, Flowers, Dealey, Broadbent, Jackson, Mason and Mullen. The German champions shot the 45,000 crowd at Molineux by taking the lead after 25 minutes with a goal from Siebert. They led 1-0 at the interval. Skillful inside forward Peter Broadbent turned the game around with a brace in the 52nd and 65th minute. Wolves pressed on for more goals but were shocked 2 minutes from time when Kozlowski equalised. The side ended 2-2, a tough match awaits Wolves in Germany. Wolves never really looked like winning the second leg. Schalke got 2-0 up at half-time with goals from Cordell and Siebert. Jackson did pull one back 3 minutes after the break but couldn't find an equaliser and were eliminated. In the following round, Schalke 04 were blown away by Spanish champions Atletico Madrid. Real Madrid won their fourth successive final with a 2-0 victory over Reims in France in Stuttgart. In 59-60, once again it was Wolverhampton Wanderers who were England's representatives. It was German opponents for Wolves again in the preliminary round, this time the East German champions ASK Vorwärts Berlin. Peter Broadbent silenced the 65,000 crowd when he put the Wolves one up in the 15th minute, but the Germans had turned it round within the half hour with goals from Nuldner and Kohl. Half-time 2-1. Wolves needed all their experience from their senior players to hold on in the second half. Just one goal down, they had every chance at Molineux. Over 55,000 were at Molineux to cheer on their heroes. Wolves gave it everything in a torrid first half, but the interval was still goalless. But on the hour, Bobby Mason broke the deadlock, and with 15 minutes to go, Peter Broadbent sealed the tie with the winner. Wolves 2, Vorwärts Berlin 0. Wolves win 3-2 on aggregate. A night to remember. Up next, Yugoslav champions Red Star Belgrade. In the first leg at the JNA Stadium, winger Norman Dealey put Wolves one up after half an hour. Red Star hit back 8 minutes later with a goal from Kostic. Wolves, unimpressed by German referee Mr. Edgar Omerborn, came away with a credible 1-1 draw, all to play for at Molineux in 2 weeks' time. Over 55,000 crammed into the old stadium to witness a great night of European Cup action. Wolves put in a real power display. Jimmy Murray opened the scoring after 8 minutes and Wolves never looked back. Bobby Mason scored a brace in the later stages and Wolves ran out 3-0 winners on the night and 4-1 winners on aggregate. Into the quarterfinals and a meeting with Spanish champions Barcelona. The warning signs were there in the previous round when the Spaniards had crushed last season's runners-up Reims 7-1 on aggregate. A crowd of 80,000 were there to greet Wolves in the first leg at the Camp Nou Barcelona on the 10th of February 1960, and sorry to say, the big occasion proved too much for them. They went behind in the 8th minute when Villaverde headed in from the right wing cross, and 10 minutes later it was 2-0 when Kubala struck. On the 65 minutes, Evaristo made it 3 and Wolves' misery was completed when 10 minutes to go, after a goalmouth scramble, Villaverde scored his second goal, smashing it into the net from close range. Barcelona 4, Wolves 0. Even though the calls looked hopeless, over 55,000 crammed into Molineux for the second leg. What they witnessed was another massacre. Barcelona came to attack and were soon bombarding the Wolves' defence. It was no surprise when the ace Hungarian forward, Sandor Kosic, put them ahead after 29 minutes. There was a glimmer of hope for Wolves in the 35th minute when Jimmy Murray stabbed the ball home from close range. The Spanish champions retained the lead a minute before half-time when Kosic put in a Martinez pass. Half-time, Wolves 1, Barcelona 2. Kosic headed in 4 minutes after the break to make it 3-1. And after 74 minutes, he scored his fourth. Bobby Mason pulled one back in the 78th minute, but Villaverde smashed him with 5 minutes to go to complete the scoring. Wolves 2, Barcelona 5. Barcelona won 9-2 on aggregate. I don't think any football fan in England thought that the champions of England could be beaten so badly. It was a real shock. Barcelona found it much tougher in the semi-finals, where they were beaten 3-1 in both legs by Real Madrid. In the other semi-final, Glasgow Rangers were annihilated 12-4 on aggregate by Germans Eintracht Frankfurt. In the final, a crowd of over 127,000 at Hampden Park witnessed what some people say is the greatest match ever played, when Real Madrid beat Eintracht 7-3. Alfredo Di Stefano scored 3 and Ferenc Puskas scored 4. A magical match. The 60-61 representatives for England will be Burnley, who had denied Wolves of a hat-trick of league championships and a league and cup double by beating Manchester City in their final league match of the season. Burnley were a fine footballing team. Scotsman Adam Blacklaw was a fine keeper. John Angus and Alex Eld are excellent fullbacks, as was defenders Tommy Cummins and Brian Miller. They had skillful midfield players Jimmy Addison and the Irish wizard Jimmy McElroy. They had two outstanding wingers, Brian Pilkington on the left and goal-scoring right winger John Connelly. Jimmy Robson and Ray Poynter were excellent frontmen. Burnley were fortunate to get a bye, so avoided the preliminary round. Not so fortunate in the first round draw, where they drew French champions Reims, who had twice in the tournament's five-year history reached the final. Burnley could not have got their European Cup campaign off to a better start when Jimmy Robson stabbed the ball home in the very first minute. In the 21st minute, Jimmy McElroy played a clever 1-2 with Ray Poynter and scored to put Burnley 2 up. In a game played between two evenly matched teams, there was no more score. Burnley would take a 2-goal lead to France in a fortnight's time. In Paris, Burnley began the game well, playing some lovely football, and took the lead after 33 minutes. After some intricate passing, following a free kick, Jimmy Robson jabbed the ball home from close range. Burnley kept the lead until half-time. 5 minutes after the break, Reims equalised when a not very, very powerful shot volley from Piantoni found its way to the corner of the net. Within 5 minutes, they were in front after Ratchet scored following a corner. Burnley, far from feeling sorry for themselves, hit back immediately when, after picking up a huge kick from keeper Blacklaw, John Connelly put his head down, ran past a couple of defenders and fired a shot past the Reims goalkeeper. A great individual goal, 2-2. Rodzic put the home side ahead in the 75th minute with a fantastic volley from a right-wing cross. Burnley held on for the final quarter of an hour. They were beaten 3-2 on the night in a fine match, but progressed to the quarterfinals and a tie against German champions SV Hamburg. Incidentally, Real Madrid's five-year group on the European Cup was over. They were beaten 4-3 on aggregate by fellow countrymen Barcelona. There will be new champions in 60-61. Back to Burnley, a crowd of over 46,000 fans crammed into Turf Moor to witness a match that we played on a quagmire of a pitch. Burnley managed to still play a very skillful game and took the lead after 8 minutes when winger Brian Pilkington smashed one past keeper from just inside the box. It remained 1-0 at half-time. Burnley continued to press forward and rewarded on the hour after some great work by Brian Miller in midfield. He passed out to the left wing to Pilkington, who smashed it in for his second. The roof almost came off Turf Moor after 74 minutes. The keeper failed to hold on to a Ray Pointer header, and there was Jimmy Robson to make it 3-0. Hamburg got themselves a lifeline when Dorfell pulled a goal back in the 78th minute. There was no more score. After a memorable night, Burnley would take a 3-1 lead to Germany. The first leg was played on the 18th of January 1961. My 7th birthday, is it, Ams? And the second leg didn't take place until almost 2 months later on the 15th of March. A huge crowd of 74,000 were there to cheer on their heroes. Hamburg got off to a great start when Stummer headed in powerfully from a left-wing cross after 8 minutes. Just before half-time, Germany's Football of the Year, Uwe Seeler, headed in the corner to level it up on 3-0 on aggregate. Burnley went ahead on aggregate when Gordon Harris scored a great shot from distance in the 55th minute. But within seconds of the start, Seeler set up Dorfield to make it 3-1 on the night. The crowd were going crazy with chants of Uwe, Uwe. And Uwe didn't disappoint them. After some great work by Stummer, Seeler was put through and Hamburg, for the first time, were in front in the tie, 5-4. Burnley's European dreams were over. The German champions went through to the semi-finals. There they would take Barcelona to a third match before going down 1-0 in Brussels. In the final in Bern, Barcelona were beaten by the underdogs Benfica from Portugal 3-2. Real Madrid and Spain's hold on the European Cup was over. 1961-62 was the season all English football fans will be the best chance yet of European Cup glory. England will be represented by the team of the century, Bill Nicholson's double winners, Tottenham Hotspur. Last season, they had won the first division at Akanta, finishing 8 points ahead of second place Sheffield Wednesday, scoring 115 goals and equaling the highest points total with 66 points. They then went on to win the FA Cup, becoming the first team this century to complete the FA Cup League Championship double. Superstars were ready to take on Europe's finest. So, who were the stars of Tottenham Hotspur? A fine goalkeeper in Scottish international Bill Brown, a formidable wing-half lineup of Danny Blanchflower, Maurice Norman and Dave McKay, the guile in midfield of Scotsman John White, a flying winger in Cliff Jones and a no-nonsense powerful centre-forward in Bobby Smith. Tottenham's first opponents in the preliminary round will be Polish champions Górnik Zabrze. Górnik were having a tremendous season, having won 17 and drew 3 of their 20 matches. The first leg took place on the 13th of September 1962. The Tottenham team was Brown, Baker, Henry, Blanchflower, Norman, Mackay, Jones, White, Smith, Allen, Dyson. The opening minutes saw the Poles attack the Tottenham goal and fall several corners. A long-range shot rattled Bill Brown's crossbar and it was no surprise when Spurs fell behind. Across from the left, cannoned off centre-half Maurice Norman into his own net, 1-0 to Górnik. It got worse for Spurs 12 minutes later when a Spurs-headed clearance was volleyed past Brown by Musilek, 2-0. And then much worse, 5 minutes before the interval, when Wolfsheck headed in a corner to make it 3. The 55,000 fans gave the Polish champions a standing ovation as they left the field at half-time. The tie looked lost when just 3 minutes after the break, a Mackay error let in Pole, whose first left shot flew past Bill Brown. Unbelievably, England's double winners were 4-0 down. Górnik were now playing with a bit of a swagger, keeping possession, totally confident. Tottenham, having never really troubled the Górnik go, began to put a few passes together and rewarded after 70 minutes when Cliff Jones headed in a Dave Mackay cross. The Tottenham goal brought the English champions back to life, and 3 minutes later, Bobby Smith headed down and Terry Dyson made it 4-2 with an unstoppable shot. Spurs were now the dominant side, and with Cliff Jones playing a blinder, pressed on for more goals, but Górnik held on for a 4-2 first leg victory. In an interview after the game, Tottenham manager Bill Nicholson was confident if Spurs get the first goal in the second leg, they will go on and win the tie. 1 week later, over 56,000 were out lane to see if Tottenham could turn it around. Bill Nicholson got his wish. Spurs did score first, and Danny Blanchflower penalty after 10 minutes. After 20 minutes, the aggregate scores were level when Cliff Jones headed in a Terry Dyson cross. Jones made it 3, 6 minutes later. But within 2 minutes, Pole put Górnik level on aggregate with a fantastic left-footed volley. But this was Tottenham's night, and by half-time, Cliff Jones had completed his hat-trick and Bobby Smith had given Tottenham a 5-1 half-time lead. Bobby Smith headed in another after 71 minutes, and 8 minutes later, Terry Dyson played a beautiful 1-2 with skipper Danny Blanchflower before scoring with a rocket of a shot. Gornick's misery was complete in the final minute when John White smashed in a Dave McKay pass. Tottenham Hotspur 8, Gornick Zabrze 1. Tottenham go through 10-5 on aggregate. Apparently this night, the glory, glory, hallelujah battle cry was born. Surely no team in Europe will relish coming to White Hart Lane. Up next for Tottenham were Dutch champions Feyenoord, who had crushed Swedish champions IFK Gothenburg 11-2 on aggregate in the previous round. Once again, Spurs will play away in the first leg. On the 1st of November 1961, Tottenham took to the field in front of 61,700 fans, knowing that to start better than in Poland. It was a tight cagey match that needed a goal. Tottenham got the goal 4 minutes from half-time when Terry Dazen headed home from close range. Tottenham without McKay, Smith and White were the better side, and 3 minutes later, 3 minutes after the interval, went 2-up when Frank Saul, deputised for Europe, England centre-forward Bobby Smith rose beautifully to head home. The goal of the night put Feyenoord back in the match when Kiermaert shot into the top corner from 30 yards. A fantastic goal. But the Dutch champions' hopes were dashed in the 70th minute when Saul scored again. Final score, Feyenoord 1, Tottenham Hotspur 3. After the sensational Gornick second leg, the second leg against Feyenoord was a bit of a letdown. I suppose being 2 goals up from the away leg, you don't really know if the stick or twist. The Dutch champions took the lead in the 7th minute with a shot from close range from Benares. It took Spurs only 3 minutes to equalise with a Terry Dyson header. There was some neat football played by both teams, but Tottenham never really looked in any danger. The game ended 1-1, Spurs through 4-2 on aggregate. Into the quarterfinals, and up next for Spurs, it was the champions of Czechoslovakia, Dukla Prague. In the first leg in Prague on Valentine's night, 1962, Tottenham without Dyson and Les Allen, Tony Markey and Terry Webwin came into the side. On a snow-covered pitch, the game was played at a furious pace. Spurs held on to go on a half-time goalless, but were undone just before the hour when Cuchero scored a fine solo goal. Dukla Prague 1, Tottenham Hotspur 0. 2 weeks later, on a snowy White Hart Lane in front of over 55,000 fans, Tottenham sent out the same 11 to turn it around. It took Spurs 11 minutes to go in front on the night when Bobby Smith converted a Danny Blanchflower free kick. 5 minutes later, they got a second. A perfect pass from John White found Dave McGuire in the box, who shot powerfully home. Half-time, Tottenham 2, Dukla 0. Dukla got the perfect start to the second half when Žilinek scored from close range. But any chance of winning were crushed with 2 Tottenham goals in 2 minutes. First, Bobby Smith with a powerful header, then another from Dave McKay. Tottenham Hotspur 4, Dukla Prague 1. Tottenham win 4-2 on aggregate. In the semi-final, Spurs will face the European Cup holders, Benfica from Portugal. For the fourth time, they will play the first leg away from home. Tottenham, already a great team, and made themselves even stronger in December 1961 when they signed England's greatest goalscorer, Jimmy Greaves, who was now eligible to play in the European Cup. The first leg was played in Lisbon in front of 60,000 fans on the 21st of March 1962. From the start, the Tottenham defence looked very edgy and hesitant. It was no surprise when Simoes put Benfica in front after only 8 minutes. The second goal after 20 minutes was a total comedy of errors. The Tottenham defence, Maurice Norman in particular, had several chances to clear, but instead presented the ball to Augusto, who, not quite believing his good fortune, tapped in. Welsh winger Cliff Jones was the only plus in the first half, causing problems with his speedy attacks. Early in the second half, Bill Brown made a great save from Eusebio. In the 55th minute, out of the blue, Spurs pulled a goal back. Across from skipper Danny Blanchflower was headed in by Bobby Smith, 2-1. For the next 10 minutes, Tottenham had their best spell of the match, with Blanchflower and McKay dominant in the midfield. So it was a huge disappointment in the 64th minute when Augusto was given a free header from close range from a Simoes cross to make it 3-1. A crucial moment occurred when Jimmy Greaves went through, but instead of taking the shot on, put it across to Smith, who scored but was in an offside position. Final score, Benfica 3, Tottenham Hotspur 1. It could have been so much better for Spurs. 2 weeks later, over 64,000 were in White Hart Lane to witness one of the most famous matches the stadium had ever witnessed. Could Spurs pull back the 2-goal deficit against the European champions? Spurs started well but couldn't get the early goal and suffered a setback after 15 minutes when Aguar put Benfica 1-up. It was 4-1 on aggregate. Jimmy Greaves got the ball in the net, but controversy, it was ruled offside. Spurs totally dominated now, and after 35 minutes, the John White cross was expertly brought down by Bobby Smith, who thumped it into the net. In a breakaway, the Tottenham crossbar was rattled. Half-time, 1-1. 3 minutes later, in the second half, John White was pulled down in the area. Danny Blanchflower, who appeared to be the coolest man in the stadium, slotted the ball home, 2-1 on the night. Benfica thought they had equalised, but they had an offside goal. Tottenham gave everything and were unlucky in the dying minutes when a Dave McKay header hit the crossbar. After a fantastic night, Spurs had come up just short, losing 4-3 on aggregate to the European champions. And European champions they remained, beating an ageing Real Madrid team 5-3 in Amsterdam. After the semi-final, Benfica manager Bela Gutman declared, "This was the final. Spurs are the hardest opponents we shall meet in the Cup." There were surprise representatives for England in the 62-63 European Cup. Ipswich Town, who under the management of Alf Ramsey had won the First Division Championship a year after being the Second Division Champions. Ipswich were given the simple task of beating Florian of Malta in the preliminary round. In the first leg, they went to the George Cross Island, where 2 goals each from their strikers, Ray Crawford and Seb Phillips, came away with a 4-1 lead. The second leg at Portman Road a week later was an annihilation. Ray Crawford scored 5, Ted Phillips, Dougie Moran got 2 each, and a goal from Welshman John Ellsworthy gave Ipswich a 10-0 victory on the night, 14-1 aggregate. Incredibly, Ipswich Town's opponents, AC Milan, in the previous round had had an even bigger winning margin, beating Union of Luxembourg 14-0 on aggregate. Ipswich were having a difficult season as champions. They were second from bottom of the league and on the previous Saturday had lost 5-1 at home to Birmingham City. Not the best form to take into a tie at the San Siro Stadium against the Italian champions, a very strong team. Unbelievably, only 7,000 fans turned up to watch the first leg on the 19th of November 1962. The match was played in a quagmire under torrential rain. It took AC Milan only 8 minutes to take the lead. Left winger Barriston firing home. 5 minutes later, it was 2 again, Borison. The scorer, a long range header that deceived Bailey in the Ipswich goal. To their credit, they didn't cave in at the interval, it was still 2-0. Ipswich just couldn't get any attacks going against the strong Milan defence, and it was no surprise when Sarri made it 3-0 in the 64th minute after a fine 1-2. After that, the game petered out. Milan seemed content with their 3-goal lead. Ipswich faced a huge task in the second leg. Ipswich, in front of 25,000 fans, gave a better account this time and early on rattled the Milan crossbar. The tie was settled just after the hour when that man Barriston smashed one into the net. Ipswich did salvage some pride and with 11 minutes remaining, Ray Crawford converted a Compton cross. In the 85th minute, Ipswich got a winner when Scotsman Bobby Blackwood scored from close range. Final score, Ipswich Town 2, AC Milan 1. Milan won 4-2 on aggregate. Milan would go on to win the European Cup, beating Scottish champions Dundee 5-2 on aggregate in the semi-final and denying Benfica a hat-trick of wins with a 2-1 victory at Wembley. England had another new representative in the 63-64 season, Everton. Unfairly labelled checkbook champions due to their big money signings, they had won the First Division title, beating Tottenham Hotspur into second place by 6 points. They were a good side. A fine young goalkeeper signed from Blackpool, Gordon West, a rock of a centre-half in Brian Lebone, fine half-backs in big money signings Jimmy Gabriel and Tony Kay, goal-scoring wingers in Billy Bingham and Johnny Morrissey, and an excellent strikers in Scotsman Alex Young and Welshman Roy Vernon. But Everton had a big problem. They had drawn Inter Milan in the preliminary round. As you know from last season's football, Italians, love them or hate them, they were now the dominant force in European football. The first leg on the 18th of September 1963 at Goodison Park was played in front of over 62,000 fans. The Everton team was West, Gabriel, Harris, Lebone, Parker, Kay, Scott, Stevens, Young, Vernon and Temple. It was a very tense affair, which both defences dominated. Alex Young and Ray Vernon just couldn't find a way through the Italian defensive wall. The first leg remained goalless. Close to 60,000 were in the San Siro Stadium to witness another close encounter. They were still 0-0 at half-time. Just after the interval, disaster struck in the form of Jair da Costa, the Brazilian right-winger, who shot past Gordon West to leave Everton with a mountain to climb. Despite the best efforts of Captain Vernon, Everton just couldn't break down the Inter defence and were eliminated at the first hurdle. Everton would be Inter's hardest opponents in that season's European Cup. They were on to win the trophy, conceding only 5 goals in 9 matches. Everton would not get a second chance. They were succeeded as league champions by their Merseyside rivals Liverpool, managed by wily Scotsman Bill Shankly. In Jerry Byrne, they had a fine fullback, a colossus of a centre-half in Ron Yates, 2 outstanding wide men in Peter Thompson and Ian Callaghan, and a deadly strike force of Roger Hunt and Ian St John. Liverpool were a lot more fortunate than Mersey rivals Everton in the draw. No crack Italians for them. It was KR Reykjavik of Iceland in the preliminary round. As expected, the Icelanders were no match for Liverpool. On the 18th of August 1964, Liverpool comfortably won the away leg 5-0 with 2 goals each from Roger Hunt and Gordon Wallace and a goal from Phil Chisnell. The second leg at Anfield was also a one-sided affair. Ian St John bagged a brace. Roger Hunt, Jerry Byrne, Bobby Graham also scored. Liverpool won 6-1, Felixson scoring for KR. Liverpool's next opponents were Anderlecht of Belgium. The Liverpool team that took the field on the 25th of November 1964 was Lawrence Lawler Byrne, Milne Yates Stevenson, Callaghan Hunt, St John Smith and Thompson. Anderlecht star player was inside forward Paul van Himpst. Apparently this was the first time Liverpool wore their all-red kit. Bill Shankly went up to his skipper, Ron Yates, and said to him, "Get into these shorts. Christ, Ronnie, you look awesome. Terrifying. You look 7 foot tall." And so an iconic kit was born. The Belgian champions had no answer to the power football of Liverpool. Scottish centre-forward Ian St John put them in front after 10 minutes. His strike partner, Roger Hunt, added a second just before half-time. 5 minutes after the break, skipper Ron Yates made it 3-0. Liverpool would take a 3-goal lead to Brussels in December. Over 47,000 fans tried to inspire their team to victory in the second leg, but Liverpool never looked like yielding their advantage. In fact, the tie was sealed in the last minute of the match when Roger Hunt put through on goal, expertly put the ball into the Anderlecht net. Anderlecht 0, Liverpool 1, 4-0 on aggregate. Liverpool's next opponents in the quarterfinal will be FC Cologne of West Germany. The first leg on the 10th of February will be away from home. Liverpool defended as did their life depended on it, and after a hard match came away from Germany with a 0-0 draw. The second leg at Anfield 6 weeks later was a frustrating one for the English champions. They just could not break down the German defence. After 2 goalless draws, it would be a playoff match in neutral Rotterdam. And what an eventful night it turned out to be. After 140 minutes of deadlock, it was Liverpool went ahead when Ian St John tapped in a cross from the left. It got better for Liverpool in the 37th minute when Roger Hunt headed in and Ian Callaghan crossed from the right. With a minute, Thielen headed in a free kick. Cologne were back in the match. At half-time, Liverpool led 2-1. It took Cologne only 3 minutes of the second half to draw level. A fantastic shot from Law that never left the ground beat keeper Lawrence. It was 2-2. Both sides pressed for the winning goal, but 2-2 was the final score. UEFA, in its wisdom, decided to settle the tie by the toss of a coin. This was years before the penalty shootout. So after 300 minutes of football, the outcome was to be decided by the toss of a coin. And even then, it wasn't as straightforward as it should have been. Reflecting years later on the incident, Liverpool skipper Ron Yates said, "I got to the referee, Mr. Shout of Belgium, and said, 'I'll have towels.' The referee said, 'OK, Liverpool towels, Cologne heads.' Up it went and it struck a divot. I said to the referee, 'Ref, you're going to have to retoss the coin.' He replied, 'You're right, Mr. Yates.' I thought the German captain was going to hit him. He was going berserk because it was falling over on the heads. He picked it up, up it went again and came back towels." Can't believe it, can you? Liverpool will face the ultimate test in the semi-final when they drew champions Inter Milan. The first leg will be at Anfield on the 4th of May 1965. Over 54,000 fans packed in and saw Liverpool get off to a dream start when Roger Hunt connected beautifully to an Ian Callaghan cross, 1-0. But 7 minutes later, Ron Yates was dispossessed by Pirro, who crossed for Mazzola to equalise. Liverpool didn't panic and continued to press forward and rewarded in the 33rd minute when Ian Callaghan played a lovely 1-2 with Roger Hunt from a free kick and served him a score with a right foot shot, 2-1. Just before half time, Chris Lawler burst through from the right and scored a third, only for the referee to rule it out. Half time, 2-1. But Liverpool did get a third in the 74th minute when the keeper found a Roger Hunt shot too hot to handle and parried it straight to Ian St John, who tucked it away. Liverpool held on to take a 2-goal lead to Italy. This was England's best chance yet at reaching a European Cup final. 8 days later, in front of over 76,000 fans, Inter and Liverpool took to the field. To say what happened next was controversial was a massive understatement. Within 10 minutes, Liverpool's first leg 2-goal lead was wiped out. In the 8th minute, Ron Yates was penalised for a questionable offence. Mario Corsa's direct shot from the edge of the area was allowed to stand, despite Liverpool's players' protest that Spanish referee Mr Ortiz de Benabil had signalled for an indirect free kick. Worse was to come 60 seconds later, when Pirro challenged keeper Tommy Lawrence as he bounced the ball and then tapped the ball into the empty net. Liverpool players went berserk. The whole thing was a joke. After an hour, full-back Fichetti strode through and scored a third. Liverpool, now 4-3 down, had the ball in the back of the net through Ian St John. It was disallowed, apparently for offside. St John said, "I just remember running through and putting the ball in. I don't know what the infringement was supposed to have been." It was a match that left a bad taste. Liverpool legend Tommy Smith, speaking years later in 2007, said, "What happened in that second leg of the European Cup semi-final left me feeling cheated. The Italians didn't win it, the referee won it for them, and the only surprise was that they didn't carry him off shoulder high at the end." Inter went on to beat Benfica 1-0 in the final at the San Siro. Inter 65-66 and Manchester United were back as England's representatives. Matt Busby had built an exciting new team, which had beaten off a tough challenge from Leeds United and Chelsea to win the league championship. In fact, goal average suddenly separated the top two teams. The United's team still had goalkeeper Harry Gregg, centre-half Bill Foulkes and legend Bobby Charlton from the pre-Munich squad. Also in the team were two fine wing-halves, the skillful Scott Pat-Garrard and the combative Nobby Stiles. Up front, Scotsman David Heard and the electric Dennis Law, and not forgetting the one and only George Best. Up first for United were Finland's champions HJK in Finland. The Finns gave United a tougher game than expected. David Heard put United in front in the very first minute and John Connelly made it two after a quarter of an hour. The Finns' heads didn't drop and Palman pulled one back after 30 minutes. Within 5 minutes, Dennis Law made it 3-1. In the second half, Pietraniemi pulled it back to 3-2 and that was how it ended. United would surely clinch the tie in 2 weeks' time at Old Trafford. And clinch it they did. A John Connelly hat-trick, two from George Best and a goal from Bobby Charlton gave United a 6-0 win on the night, 9-2 on aggregate. Up next, the Vorwärts Berlin of East Germany. In the first leg in Berlin, United kept the East Germans at bay and with 20 minutes to go, it looked like being goalless, but that man Dennis Law struck to give United the lead in the 73rd minute. And 7 minutes later, John Connelly got a second. ASK Vorwärts 0, Manchester United 2. They were odds on for a quarter-final place. They made no mistake, a David Heard hat-trick gave United a 3-1 win. Pippenberg replied for the Germans. United got through 5-1 on aggregate. Up next, former European champions Benfica of Portugal, still a major force and with star player Eusebio at the peak of his powers. On the 21st of February 1966, over 64,000 packed into Old Trafford to witness the first leg. Benfica started better and Augusto gave them the lead after half an hour. Within 6 minutes, though, United were level through David Heard and a minute before the break, Dennis Law put them in front. It was a fine match. Veteran Bill Foulkes made it 3-1 in the 58th minute, only for Torres to make it 3-2 after 72. The game ebbed and flowed, but 3-2 it remained. United will have a tough task in Lisbon in a month's time. Now, everyone in England knew what a great player George Best was, and after this match, the whole world would know. After only 6 minutes, he headed in a Tony Dunn free kick, and after 13, he ran through the bewildered Benfica defence and smashed in a second. 2 minutes later, United were in dreamland. Good play between Lauren Hurd put through Canelli, who incredibly made it 3-0. Unbelievable. Easy, easy, chanted the away fans. He stayed 3-0 until the break. 7 minutes after the break, United conceded when Shea Brennan, in a moment of madness, lobbed the ball over his own keeper, 1-3. But even this couldn't keep United down, and in the 78th minute, Pratt Graham got fourth, and a magical night was completed a minute from time when put through Bobby Charlton, rounded the keeper and scored a fifth. Benfica 1, Manchester United 5, 8-3 on aggregate. Surely the best performance by an English club in the European Cup to date. Up next in the semi-finals, it was the champions of Yugoslavia, Partizan Belgrade. United were strong favourites to be England's first winners of the trophy. Manchester United at full strength must have been quietly confident on the 13th of April 1966 when they kicked off in Belgrade in a hard-fought first half. The game remained goalless. It was the Yugoslav champions who made the break for a minute into the second half with a goal from Hezanijic. The home team pressed on and were rewarded with a second goal on the hour through Bijak. United just couldn't get going, and apart from a Dennis Law effort that hit the bar, the score remained 2-0 at the final whistle. It'll be hard in a week's time at Old Trafford, but certainly not impossible. Over 61,000 fans crammed into the old stadium to try and cheer their heroes into the European Cup final. United were without George Best. From the start, it was one-way traffic, but United were struggling to create clear-cut chances. They were also frustrated by the fussy referee, Mr. Dernst of Switzerland. The Partizan defence had a no-nonsense strategy, and both fullbacks were booked for bad tackles. At half-time, it remained goalless. The second half started just as the same as the first half had ended. United surging forward with the crowd getting noisier, but still they just couldn't create clear-cut chances. The United players were getting very frustrated, and after being fouled, Nobby Styles appeared to lash out an opponent. The melee that followed only wasted valuable time United were running out of. At the end of it, Pat Crowland and Mujalovic were both sent off, and then a goal out of the blue. Nobby Styles put in a harmless-looking low cross that totally deceived keeper Sosic and ended up in the net. United had 18 minutes to save their European campaign. Even though United dominated the position, they just could not create the chances. In the end, it was Partizan Belgrade who would go through to the final. This was a hugely disappointing result coming after the Benfica tie. In the final, Partizan went down 2-1 to a new-look Real Madrid team in Brussels. Into 1966-67, it was Liverpool's turn to have another crack at European Cup glory. In the first round, Liverpool drawn against Romania's champions Petrolul Pialesti. Liverpool, in the first leg at Anfield, found the Romanians a hard nut to crack. In fact, at half-time, it remained goalless. It wasn't until 20 minutes from time that England man Roger Hunt broke the deadlock. 9 minutes later, Ian Callaghan got a second. Liverpool 2. 2-0 winners. Liverpool fell behind after 38 minutes when Moldovanu steered in across from the left. It remained 1-0 at half-time. 5 minutes after the break, Roger Hunt fired in an equaliser. But in the space of 6 minutes, around the hour mark, Liverpool lost control of the tie. Bock scored from close range, and then Dridier scored direct from a free kick. 3-1, 3-1 aggregate. It will mean a playoff match in Brussels the following week. Liverpool did not make the same mistakes. They won the playoff match comfortably 2-0 with first half goals from Ian St John and winger Peter Thompson. Up next, Ajax of Amsterdam, Holland, first leg in Amsterdam. Over 55,000 were there to witness the birth of Dutch football on the world scene. The Dutch side up until now made little impression on the European competition. Liverpool were going to find they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. After 3 minutes, De Wolf scored from close range, and after 17 minutes, Johan Cruyff, who had gone to be one of the greatest players of all time, added a second. In the 38th minute, Nanninga scored following a free kick, and 4 minutes later converted a right-wing cross. Incredibly, at half-time, England's champions were 4-0 down. It got worse. In the 70th minute, Groot scored direct from a free kick. Liverpool did get a consolation goal in the last minute when fullback Chris Lawler scored. Ajax 5, Liverpool 1. The following week, over 53,000 were at Anfield, hoping to witness the greatest comeback in European Cup history. After only 3 minutes, they nearly had a dream start when Peter Thompson's crashing shot hit the crossbar. A few minutes later, Jeff Strong headed wide from close range when he should have done better. It remained 0-0 at half-time. 4 minutes after the break, 19-year-old Cruyff beat Lawrence to put Ajax 1 up on the night. 6 minutes later, Roger Hunt tapped in a pass from Ian St John, 1-1. Liverpool, as they had to do, pressed on for more goals, but after a breakaway, Cruyff scored again to put Ajax 2-1 up on the night. In the closing stages, Roger Hunt did equalise, but that was it. Liverpool 2, Ajax 2. Ajax wins 7-3 on aggregate. It would take the Dutch a few more years to reach their peak. Ajax were knocked out in the next round by Dukla Prague. There were new winners of the trophy in 1966-67. The wonderful attacking football Scottish champions Glasgow Celtic overcome the defensive wall of Inter Milan to win the trophy on an unforgettable night in Lisbon. Manchester United were again representatives for England in 67-68. Up first for them were Hibernians of Malta. First leg at Old Trafford on the 20th of September 1967. As expected, the Maltese champions were no match for United. A brace each from David Sadler and Dennis Law gave United a 4-0 home leg advantage. A full-strength United team laboured in the second leg in Malta a week later and came away with a goalless draw, going through 4-0 on aggregate. Excuse me. In the second round, it will be Yugoslav champion Sarajevo. They would be hoping for a better outcome from their previous Yugoslav experience against Partizan. In the first leg in Sarajevo, United played a perfect European away leg and came away with a scoreless draw. It would all be down to the Old Trafford tie. In a great European night, over 62,000 fans filled the old ground. United broke the deadlock after 10 minutes after good work on the right by Pat Curran and teenager Brian Kidd. A cross was forced in by left winger John Aston. Early in the second half, United very nearly scored when Alex Stepney, in the United goal, quickly threw the ball out to George Best just inside his own half. He then ran past two defenders and shot a goal. The ball took a wicked deflection and bounced off the post and was about to spin back into the net, but was grasped at the last minute by the Sarajevo keeper. Best then avoided a sending off when, after his header was saved by Mutic in the Sarajevo goal, he appeared to lash out at the keeper, striking him in the face. The referee had a word, but that was it. The referee then started to lose control of the match. It built to a head when George Best was crudely kicked to the ground on the edge of the Sarajevo box. The Sarajevo team then decided to round the poor old ref, protesting about the earlier incident between Best and Multic. It all ended with a Sarajevo player getting his marching orders. They were down to 10 men. From the free kick, Bill Foulkes headed against the crossbar. The ball was put back in the area, and there was George Best to volley home. The Sarajevo players went berserk, running up to a linesman and pushing him about. Two policemen came on the pitch to protect him. The players then surrounded and started pushing the French ref, claiming the linesman had flagged. Somehow, Sarajevo managed to cool down and started to play a bit of football and were rewarded 5 minutes in time when a great header from Delalic flew into the net, 2-1. United had to be careful, as the new away goal rule meant another Sarajevo goal would put them through. But United survived. In the quarterfinals were Polish champions Górnik Zabrze. In the first leg, United will be without Dennis Law, who had sustained a knee injury. Another huge crowd at Old Trafford, hopeful for more European drama. It was another hard game. United did not break through until the hour mark, when after some George Best trickery, Florenski put into his own net. The United cause was helped when Brian Kidd got a second in the dying seconds, 2-0. The second leg in Chorzów, in front of 70,000 fans, saw Górnik v Manchester United played out in a blizzard on heavy snow. Sir Matt Busby said years later this was one of United's greatest performances. The temperature got as low as minus 15, and early on left-back Tony Dunn was forced to soldier on with a bad ankle injury. United held out bravely until the 70th minute, when keeper Alex Stepney was penalised for holding onto the ball too long. An indirect free kick was initially cleared, only for star man Lodek Lewandowski to hit a shot into United's net. Despite attack after attack, the Reds held on to go through 2-1 in aggregate. The 67-68 campaign wasn't getting any easier. In the semi-final, it would be Real Madrid. The first leg took place on the 24th of April 1968 in front of over 62,000 fans. In a tough match, the two teams will be separated by one solitary goal, a George Best left-foot shot after good work by Brian Kidd on the left. 3 weeks later, the two teams served up a classic. United seemed to be coping okay until the 32nd minute, when the Spanish champions were given a free kick on the right wing for an infringement that seemed to baffle all the players. It was played in and there was Piri to head home 1-0. 9 minutes later, a terrible mistake by right-back Shea Brennan let in Hento, the survivor of the great Real team from the 50s, to run through and make it 2-0. United were behind on aggregate. Incredibly, 3 minutes later, Zocco made an even bigger goof than Brennan's when he sliced an innocent-looking cross into his own goal, 2-1 on the night. The incredible first half was not over. In the 44th minute, following a free-kick, top scorer Amencio shot in powerfully, 3-1 to Real at half-time. United were in trouble. In the 73rd minute, Pat Creran took a free-kick that was headed on by George Best. The time seemed to stand still as David Sadler scored at the back post, 3-2. United saw their chance, and 5 minutes later, George Best made space, squared the ball, and amazingly, in the inside right position was United veteran centre-half Bill Foulkes, who expertly shot into the Real net, 3-3. United led 4-3 on aggregate. It seemed to knock the stuffing out of Real Madrid. The referee blew for time, and for the first time, England would have a representative in the European Cup final. On the 29th of May 1968, it will be Manchester United versus Benfica at Wembley Stadium. Sadly, there will be no Dennis Law in the United team. He was still out with his knee injury. The United team that lined up in an unfamiliar all-blue kit was Stepney, Brennan, Dunn, Creran, Foulkes, Stiles, Best, Kidd, Charlton, Sadler and Law. United started well. John Eston on the left wing was playing a blinder, but they had a stroke of luck when a Eusebio effort hit the crossbar with Alex Stepney in the United goal nowhere. George Best was getting some rough treatment from the Benfica defenders. The first half ended 0-0. United made the breakthrough 8 minutes into the second half when Bobby Charlton headed in a David Sadler cross. United were now on top. Best had a shot well saved, then Sadler went close. United looked in control but got a shot when Grasser equalised in the 79th minute with a fine right foot shot, 1-1. With the game heading towards extra time came the deciding moment of the match. Eusebio, one of the world's great players, was put clean through. He shot powerfully at goal, but Alex Stepney dived to his left to save. Eusebio could only stand and applaud. That was the Portuguese champion's last hurrah. In the opening 9 minutes of extra time, they were blown away. After 2 minutes, George Best walks past the Benfica defence and walked the ball into the net. 2 minutes later, Brian Kidd headed in. And in the 99th minute, how apt, when Bobby Charlton made it four with a sweet right foot shot. Manchester United were champions of Europe. I can remember the scenes at the end of the game, watching it as a 14-year-old on the old black and white TV. Everyone was full of it in school the next day. Everyone was pleased for Matt Busby, having built another great team following the Munich crash. There were lots of highs and lows for the European clubs over the years. The Busby Babes, Wolves getting annihilated 9-2 by Barcelona, Tottenham's offside goals against Benfica, Everton's bad luck in drawing into Milan in the preliminary round, Liverpool going out after some very dodgy refereeing decisions, and now Manchester United coming back from 3-1 down at the Bernabeu and then blowing Benfica away in 9 amazing minutes. Great days. Well, thanks for listening. If you want to make any comments regarding this or any other episode, go to their Facebook page, Back in the Day, and make them there. Catch you later.